session number 17896, reel 9.
This is General Purden, reel 5. So, to conclude,
well,
Oman.
What I would like to say about Oman in conclusion is that how much that country owed to the British officers and to the Omani and the Baluchi soldiers and the Indian medical people. I had on what they call deputation from the Indian army, my doctors and dentists. When I tell you that those Baluchi soldiers and Omani soldiers were bloody badly paid, they never saw the Sultan, or they hardly ever saw the Sultan at all. They might see him when they were down Salalah once, some of them might see him when the colonel went to say goodbye, the chap commanding the battalion, say goodbye to the colonel, because they did a 9 months at a time down in Dhofar, and then I brought them up for retraining and also policing their part of North Oman. But the way the British officers had the loyalty of those men, and they were fighting bloody hard actions. I mean, you know, there were terrific firefights. I mean, I went out on operations myself, and I know from personal experience, you know, you'd suddenly be open fire on from, at first you'd think it was nowhere, know where the hell it was, a terrific hail of fire would hit you. And with all the mountains and rocks and the echoes, it was very hard to know where you were being fired on from. And so from a point of view of basic soldiering, you know, the old lessons came out yet again. You know, location of enemy fire, the importance of being able to hit your target, not waste your ammunition, because you had to carry your ammunition. You know, you couldn't waste it. So don't fire if you can't see anyone. Our pilots were so good. They were very brave, all of them. And they were the only pilots at that time serving in the Royal Air Force who had active combat experience, apart from senior ranks who'd fought in the war, really, or fought in Korea. I mean, these guys were shot at from the ground, and I don't think I had an aircraft that came back without bullet holes in it. And of course, being sophisticated aircraft like Skymasters were, compared to the Provosts, there was Strike Masters, you had so many wires that could be cut, you know, and we chaps did some terribly gallant things, bringing aircraft back rather than let them, you know, crash in the enemy area and so on. I also had a very brave man commanding our little navy. The British officers were, I thought, were absolutely superb. And I had contract officers as well as seconded officers. They now call it loan service. And I remember we were all very amused when Dennis Healy said, I think it was in 1968, not one British soldier is engaged on operations. And we could have told him of a number of British soldiers who were very hotly engaged on operations. But I know when I went to the School of Infantry, which was my next job, that I brought back anti-aircraft fire using light machine guns because they weren't doing it. And so we started practicing at, you know, firing a Vari light up and firing at that, or pushing balloons up and firing at that and so on. All these things, all the basic infantry skills were so important there. And I was lucky enough. I think probably the best regiment I had sending me officers out there wasn't a British Army regiment at all. It was the Royal Marines. And they were so well trained in their basics, the Royal Marine officers. Superb.
So as far as the Dhofar campaign, once you had got all the equipment that you
needed... Yes, yeah. I was gone.
You were gone.
My successor.
The problem was solved.
Yes, it was a long problem to solve, because I left in 1970, and it took John Graham, who took over from me, Tim Creasy, who took over from him, and Ken Perkins, who was the final chap, who commanded when victory was won. But no, thank God, we finally, you know, thanks an awful lot to Field Marshal Rayleigh Gibbs that we got what we badly needed. But for 3 years we were, or 2.5 years, completely ignored by our politicians and by the Ministry of Defence.
Extraordinary. Mm. And yet, I would imagine it was a firm plank of foreign policy to keep the Straits of Hormuz open.
Well, you'd think so.
You know, particularly when the Ayatollah took over the far side.
Yes. Well, we didn't have the Ayatollah then. The Iranians were fighting for us, the Imperial Iranian ground forces and air force. There was no problem
so
there.
Their motive was really to make sure the tankers kept moving.
So yes, I should think so. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Yeah. Time.
That's right. That's right.
So that was. You came home to the School of Infantry.
That's
and then
right.
You became GOC Northwest District.
Yes. Where I had a lot to do with territorials there, really.
Yes. You've had a lot to do with the territorials.
Yeah, I love them. I think they're great people. I really do. I think they're wonderful people. And I had an awful lot of very keen territorials. I had some regulars there as well, which was good. But my TA were a great lot. No, I think the world of the territorials.
And then your final posting was GOC near East Lanthorpe.
That's right, that's right, yeah. And when I went out there, I had responsibility, which I hadn't until the end, of supplying, I was the administrative boss of certain troops that were serving in Oman, including the SAS. But operationally, they were under command of the Commander Sultan's Armed Forces. And I went over several times to see them, down in Dhofar and up in Oman. And we had troops in Sharjah when I first went there. And the ruler said to me, I can't think why your government's pulling them out, because he said, we never see them. We know they're training, but they never come into the capital in uniform. Their behavior is immaculate. And we had room for an infantry battalion and a battery of guns or a squadron of tanks and other things. Beautiful accommodation. And we just pulled out. There was Dennis Healy. That's a political one. And I originally went there, according to my posting order, I should have been there for 3 years. And then I suddenly found myself a defence cut by Harold Wilson, who, after we'd been there a bare 14 months, cancelled my job. And I had a hell of a fight trying to get him to... I mean, he was trying to emasculate everything. He took the whole of the Air Force away, apart from 4 air sea rescue helicopters. Yeah. 9 squadrons went, I think I'm right in saying. You know, there were these Lightning squadrons and Hercules squadrons, and the whole lot went...
It's still a very busy base, even today.
Yes, I know it is. But, you see, the Air Marshal, Sir John Aiken, and I, who got on very well together, he was my boss, overall boss. We were briefed every Friday by Tank Sherman, among other people, my Borneo friend, and we knew the position of every Russian warship above and below sea in our area at that time, thanks to Malta, Gibraltar, and ourselves in Cyprus. The 9 Royal Air Force squadrons left, and the next briefing on Friday, we didn't know where any of them were. But that's the sort of thing politicians never think about. And they cut the jobs of God knows how many loyal Cypriots, both Greek and Turkish, you know. And again, I had a hell of a fight to get them decent redundancy terms. And I finally got a man who'd got a heart, who came out from whoever was slashing, and I pointed out to him, you're going to leave an awful lot of disgruntled people here, not only that, but they may make trouble. And really, they've been so loyal. I mean, there were guys there who got distinguished flying medals, military medals, so on, fighting for us in the war. And they thought the world of us, you see, normally. And anyway, one managed to get that sorted out. But I felt if there have got to be defence cuts, and I still believe in my principle of leading from the front, I ended up the army leading from the front as the senior defence cut in the British Army. But we had thought we were going to be there for 3 years.
That criteria was tremendously important. I mean,
I knew.
U2 spy planes.
Yes, that's right. I used to see that old U2 black thing and watch it take off and everything. Yeah. I think probably that. I mean, I think the spy plane wasn't withdrawn. It was nothing to do with Harold Wilson, and they let the Americans
that
keep it.
That criteria is still very active. I mean, I have a lot to do with Lionel.
Have you? Yes.
And I know
have
a lot
you?
Of the aircrew there. Yeah. They're always staging out through there.
Are they? On the way to...
Well, where are they now, for instance, Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
You know, they turn right and go down over the Red Sea and then left.
Yes,
Iraq.
Yes.
But that's still, from the distance point of view.
Yes. Well, it is awfully important, I quite agree.
And, of course, it's the backup base for the no-fly zone aircraft.
Yes.
In both Turkey and in Kuwait.
Well, it must have been reinforced. Yeah.
So
good. It has to be. And then, of course, you see on the top of Mount Olympus, you've got that white golf ball where you've got 360-degree radar traverse of the whole area over parts of Russia. Amazing. That was a wonderful station. I mean, I had the most wonderful house there. And bloody good soldiers out there. In fact, one of my battalions was commanded, Welsh Guards, commanded by the present CDS, Charles Guthrie. Very charming and bright officer. Well, I think that's the end of it.
You have had a fascinating career. I mean,
I've been bloody lucky.
If you hadn't been captured, it probably would have been even more active.
No.
I'm just wondering if, just to finish now, that you can look back and tell me. I mean, you've mentioned Bob Ryder.
Yes.
And Charles Newman.
Yes.
You met Lord Lovett, didn't you? The Lovett
Yes, indeed I did. Shimi Lovett, when I was up at Lochalot, he was then a captain in the Lovett Scouts. And I remember him teaching us the use of the Scout telescope up there. And then the next time I saw Shimi, he was commanding a troop of No. 4 Commando, and they were stationed at Troon. And Patricia and I were at a dance at the hotel in Troon. She would remember the name of it. And I remember we practically fell over his feet because he was lying. We all drank rather a lot in those days. And she was lying with his feet out like this. Whether he was conscious or not, I'm not sure. He then got command of 4 Commando and took them to Dieppe. He took them to Boulogne, where they did awfully well, and he got an MC. Then he took them to Dieppe. I think he got his DSO there. And then he was given command of the Commando Brigade. He was a hell of a nice chap. Frightfully good-looking man. I mean, if you'd put him up against Errol Flynn, you wouldn't have looked at Errol Flynn. And his wife was the most lovely woman. He was a bloody good guy.
I remember, even as a child, I was, 11 in 42 when the Dieppe raid happened, I think, wasn't it? 42?
It was, August 42.
There was a photograph of him just having returned, and I can still see this picture of a face looking so tired and exhausted.
Yes.
And even as a sort of a child insulated from war, I could see what war did to people.
Yes.
The sheer exhaustion.
Yeah.
And the staring eyes.
Yes. Well, it's a hell of a strain, of course.
I know. Which I've seen on, for instance, prisoners out of Stalingrad.
Yes, sunken eyes, yes,
sunken
eyes. Absolutely, yeah.
And that must have been a hell of an engagement.
Yes, well, in fact, it was only the commandos who did well. The poor old Canadians were, what a badly planned operation.
And taking tanks ashore, I should have been
God. No, it was an appalling operation, appalling. Who else would you like to ask me about? Douglas Bader?
Douglas Bader, yes. How did you get to know him well?
Yes, I did. I liked him enormously. Well, you see, my father played rugger for Ireland, and Douglas Bader would have played rugger for England had he not had lost his legs. I mean, he was really good. And my father ended up, after he left the army, he was considered too old to stay on in the RAMC as a major general, and he offered to stay in any rank, but they had so few reasonably senior jobs, and there were up-and-coming people. So he was given the job of, first of all, of running a hospital somewhere in Liverpool during their blitz. And then he was sent down to Roehampton, to the Limless Hospital there. And so he knew all about Douglas Bader you know, with the limbless thing. I think from time to time legs were sent out to Douglas Bader because, you know, he worn them out or things went wrong with them. And Douglas Bader knew all about my father because my father ran the army rugger. And so he was awfully nice to me. He was so approachable and, I mean, he was a real hero. He really was. And I thought the world of him, and I think most young people of my age did. I hate to see these books decrying him and so on. You know, he never touched alcohol. Mm. Never. I never heard him use dirty language at all.
Of course, there was a tremendous controversy in the Battle of Britain over the big wings.
Yes.
Between Heath Park,
yes,
who operated the Kentish sector.
Yes.
And
Lee Mallory.
Lee Mallory.
Yes.
There was no love lost between
them. No, there wasn't, was there?
Bader was a Lee Mallory man.
Yes.
And I think possibly a lot of the flak that's flying around now were the Keith Park pilots. You know,
yes.
This thing inevitably happened.
Yes.
Did you meet any of the famous, you know, World War II generals? Did you ever meet Monty in your time?
I never met Monty. I sat through... I didn't. I was never introduced to him. My father, after the war, became the Ulster agent in London. He was the representative of the Northern Ireland government. And Monty came to an Ulster Association dinner, and he gave a talk, and strange to say, picked out my regiment to praise, which was very nice. He also gave a lecture at the Staff College when I was there, and we were all terrified that we might cough. But I'm afraid I didn't meet him. And I met Slim and shook hands with him. I thought he was awfully nice, very avuncular, big man, but I didn't have a chance of a talk. I know his son quite well.
Alexander?
Yes. He was Honorary Colonel of the London Irish, which I eventually became. And I loved him. He was a great man. I remember I had to give a talk. I had to propose his health, I think. And I was sitting beside him, and I had Patricia on the other side. And when I got up, I was so terrified making this speech, this august man. Anyway, I got through my speech. It was only when I sat down, he said to me, would you let go of my shoulder now? And I got him by the shoulder. He said, you had a grip like steel on me. And I said, God, sir, I'm so sorry. But he was a man who, again, you know, you would die for. He's a wonderful chap. I saw Auchinleck once walking through the lines in Omagh when I was stationed up there, a rather remote figure. You know, he wasn't one of these chaps who, like Alex, who, you know, you felt he emanated vibes of friendliness. I think the Orc was probably a very shy man. I'm just trying to think. I tell you who I knew quite well, because he was in Colditz with me, was Cecil Merritt, who got the VC at Dieppe, commanding the South Saskatchewan Regiment. A very modest man. I never met a VC who wasn't modest, and I've met a lot.
The crooked one.
Who's that?
You describe in your book.
Oh, yes, sorry. The non-VC, that terrible chap.
But I mean, as
yeah,
I said,
yeah, yeah.
The VC
well, that's right.
Usually talk
no,
about.
That's right. That's
yes,
right. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I met Harding, just very, very briefly, and...
Templar?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. He tried to sell me his mother's house.
Oh, yes.
He said, I know the very house for you, and I think you ought to buy it. And I said, well, thank God, actually, we were bidding for a house in County Armagh at the time, which I always wish I'd had. And I said, well, sir, I'm afraid I'm bidding for the Grange at the moment. Anyway, I think I've taken up enough of your time.
Well, I have got plenty of time, but, Corran, you've been so generous with your time.
I haven't at all.
It's been a marvellous record for history.
Well, it's so nice to meet you, apart from anything else. No, really.
But what is so good about oral history is your book is beautifully written.
I don't think it is. But
when you've got a voice behind it.
Yes.
Where the warmth and enthusiasm or the disdain or the...
Hope there hasn't been too much of that.
Not much of that. No. But thank you very much indeed for giving me this interview.
Oh, I'm delighted.